New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. This is Johnny Bluestar. My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, specializes in the creation of media and promotional content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, press releases, articles, web content, etc. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast. We offer client-based and collaborative products. Also, we offer active investors the chance to join us in the creation of proprietary products. For more information, go to newgalaxyenterprises.com or contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. Good morning, doctor. Looks like the start of a new year.
It sure does.
And we ourselves got to this point.
I hope that we're able to make some changes in the healthcare field, at least get people excited about the possibilities that things can be better. Today, I think a good start for the year would be to delve into the basic philosophy of integrative health. And we can do that by looking at the past, and a great example of what we can do is to imitate Leonardo da Vinci. A lot of people are familiar with the blogs that I put on my website on a weekly basis, and the blog for this past week was a New Year's wish, which is that we develop a more tolerant attitude. And I think in order to do that, we need to respect other people, other people's beliefs, other people's thoughts, ways of living, science, philosophies, etc., while still maintaining a strong foothold in our own beliefs. Of course, by that interaction, we begin to modulate our own ideas by the free interchange of ideas with people we tolerate, with people we respect. And so I was reminded of a great book as I wrote the blog, How to Develop a More Tolerant Attitude, How to Live with Others in More Harmony. And that book was How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci by Mr. Gelb. G-E-L-B. And it turns out that at this very moment on top bestseller lists, there's a book, a biographical book on Leonardo da Vinci written by Walter Isaacson, which is doing quite well, and I intend to read that book. So I'm excited about reviewing these very basic principles that have been there since the dawn of mankind. And of course, we're not going to the chances of us becoming just like Leonardo da Vinci are pretty low. But hey, we can try. But the very basis of his thinking was to integrate both parts of the brain, both parts of our personality. And we touched on this very philosophy last time we were together, Johnny, when we talked about strength and wisdom, right and wrong, male, female. Those very basic principles of thought that we see in all philosophers. And so the beauty of Leonardo da Vinci, and I use that word with a lot of intent, beauty, was that he was able to integrate these polarities of thought, strength and wisdom, male and female, heart, brain, all those things that we covered a little bit. So Leonardo was beautiful in that that's a very word the ancients used to integrate strength and wisdom, beauty or harmony. So if you recall, we talked about the pillars of the Kabbalah last time. And if you recall, the third pillar, the pillar of beauty, is a balance of the two pillars to the sides, strength and wisdom. So that's why I use the word beautiful for Leonardo da Vinci. Of course, he produced a whole lot of works of art that are quite beautiful. And of course, we can all think about Mona Lisa and a whole lot of other amazing works that are revered today. And so as we look at the way Leonardo thought, it's quite achievable, I think, but perhaps not to the degree that he did. And so if you look at the blog, hugorodia.com, on integrative health wish for the new year, which is exactly how you started the show, Johnny, a wish for the new year. And so we can look at very basic tenets, very basic principles that Leonardo espoused to bring this beautiful reconciliation of the opposites. And that is the genius and beauty of Leonardo da Vinci, the integration of opposites. And so as we look at the blog, that would be helpful if people had it in front of them. But the first quality that he talks about is curiosità. Of course, they're going to be in Italian, but hey, you can get it. It's curiosity, an insatiable curiosity, and an unrelenting quest for continuous learning. Of course, you can't do that if you're not tolerant or respectful of other people's ideas. Number two, dimostrazione. Know for yourself. And you are a great example of both of those qualities, Johnny, because you're curious, insatiably curious. You're always looking to see what's going on and dig deep into issues. But you want to know for yourself as well. You're not going to take anybody else's word. You want to study issues for yourself. And so if we just go around copycatting everybody else, we're not going to be able to reach this beautiful integration of the opposites. Because we'll be tossed to and fro from one idea to another instead of doing the homework ourselves. So curiosità, dimostrazione. Number three, sensazione, a refinement of the senses, especially light. You recall we talked about light quite a bit on our last show, which is an integration of energy and information. Light is, according to physicists. But any cursory examination of the subject of light not only fills us with wonder of the mysteries of light, but also the excellence of light, not so much physical, but also intellectual. To be enlightened is a word that we use quite a bit. But of course, to perceive light, to be able to understand it and enjoy it to its maximum degree, we have to have a refinement to the senses. Of course, if our senses are dulled by poor diets, poor habits, poor health, if you will, then our senses are not going to get the maximum effect of the experience of light or the physical world, which is, like I said, based on light.
Well, the fact that Leonardo da Vinci was a painter.
Yes.
And I think he was greatly concerned with that in his craft.
Exactly. Of course, he delved into everything, and which is the point of the story here, that he wasn't just limited to painting.
Right.
He was a sculptor, an inventor, and a scientist of the highest degree, because he was able to integrate both sides of the brain. Number four, sfumato, which is to embrace ambiguity, paradox, uncertainty. Because a whole lot of people, in order to avoid uncertainty, pick one side or the other. Take, for instance, when we talk about politics, Democrats, Republican, and the two shall never meet. seems like these days, which is catastrophic for our society. And so a person that is able to embrace the opposites is able to embrace ambiguity, paradox, uncertainty. Because to navigate the middle ground requires a special mind that will see the good on both sides, in that the sides are there, the opposites are there, in order to bring us to the middle, where perhaps nobody's going to be happy, but at least we'll be content to have listened to everyone's input, and then we can get along, and then we can tolerate one another, respect one another. But I see this quite a bit in medicine. It's so dysfunctional because this is one of the major faults in the system. It is not able to embrace paradox and uncertainty and ambiguity. So in the quest, futile quest for certainty, they get into a left brain approach where everything has to be proven black and white with mixed results, we have to say. And we'll talk about some more. But F. Scott Fitzgerald said it very well also, that a sign of high intelligence is to be able to incorporate opposites into our lives without going crazy. Of course, he kind of did a little bit, but he tried. By the way, he's the guy who wrote The Great Gatsby and all that, so that's a great book showing how America has tried to embrace ambiguity. As you recall, this was a rich man who still listened to bohemian types, and he wanted to navigate both sides of the equation, and it didn't work out too well for him. Number five, arte ciencia, which is sort of what I was talking about. It's a balance of science and art, logic and imagination, whole brain thinking. And this is how we think of Leonardo da Vinci every time we bring him up, because of this very thing. And you touched on that a little bit there a minute ago. And I responded that he was able to integrate these two sides. And as you know, you can find scientists who totally disregard imagination, the artistic side. And then you can find artists who have no clue about the sciences, and you can see that we're just not going to do well if these people are able to get away with their polarized thinking, which happens all too often in our society. Number six, corporalita, the cultivation of grace, ambidexterity, fitness, poise. And so a lot of times we might think of these qualities as hedonism, but to be able to enjoy the pleasures of life with grace, with respect for others, gives people a magnetism, a charisma that is very attractive. So denying the cultivation of grace, of fitness and poise, because it might be hedonistic, has very nasty side effects. Of course, you know, the danger is that we do become hedonistic. So here's the balance, to be able to be elegant, but at the same time maintain humility, if you will, and not become an elitist or someone over-concerned with looks and all that. And last but not least, cognizione, which is an understanding that all things are connected. That when we have a balloon and you put pressure on one side of the balloon, the whole balloon will feel that increase in pressure. So this is what scientists will call systems thinking. So there's a big move in the sciences to be more holistically thinking as far as the human body goes, that all organs are connected. They don't work in isolation, that we're connected to our environment, that we cannot do one thing industrially and not expect negative consequences if we're not careful with the environment. This is what the Asians will say very neatly. When a butterfly flaps its wings, it can produce a hurricane around the world. And so, Johnny, these are the very basic tenets that made Leonardo da Vinci who he was. And so, are they attainable? Can a regular person reach this level of integration? What do you think, Johnny?
Well, I was thinking about certain more sort of hermetic side to this, which I think that Da Vinci was probably interested in too. And that is that I'm just going to say to start out with, if you take your fist or both fists and you cross your arms with them, you'll be in a certain, I would say, it will change your direction, your mood. Now, if you take those same hands and you spread your palms and put them open and sort of go into a more supplication posture, it will change your mood. And what has this got to do with? Well, it has to do with the integration and the separation of the hard and softer elements of personality, of compassion and severity. Now, in the Taoist yoga, which is a form of yoga, the back of the body has a channel called the channel of control. And the front of the body has a channel called the channel of function. And it's been my observation that people who are, just coming around talking to other people or making decisions or actually performing their work, sometimes gravitate to the front of their bodies and sometimes to the back. And some people are stuck in the front of their body and stuck in their back. And this is sort of a neurological weight. And actually, people's personality, to one extent, in a very crude way, can be divided between being sort of a hard personality or a severe personality and a soft personality. Now, in looking at life, we need both of these attributes, softness and hardness, depending on the situation. But I think besides the actual thinking of, in a hard and soft way, it's sort of the personality as a whole, comprising one's sensations, one's feelings, and one's thoughts, and even one's spirituality, can be divided in this way, and the trick is to integrate it. And that is possible to an extent and with ordinary techniques, with ordinary understanding of yourself, with perhaps possibly with therapy or with exercise. Just people integrate in different ways. But in a more refined way, a more spiritual way, there's very specific ways of creating this integration, which is extremely important if one wants to live in a world where you're in contact with spirit.
Okay, well, what I'm hearing is that you're giving a specific example to the general premise that Da Vinci brings up with those seven Italian points, if you will. And so, yeah thanks for that. So basically, you have put a fine point on how one can start doing that with a simple technique. So
there are different levels of integration, and this, what he's talking about, I think is very, very fundamental and important, and you can't build on a foundation of integration, of integrating yourself and knowing yourself, without these elements.
Yes, and that goes to a very interesting point that the Greeks emphasized quite a bit. If we go to Delphus, the Temple of Delphus, there's a nice refrain right above the entrance to the temple, and that's to know thyself.
Gnothi seotan, know thyself, in Greek.
So, and one of the main issues about knowing ourselves is to know that we're dual creatures, good and evil, virtue and vice, as above, so below, spiritual, physical. And so if we don't integrate these forces, there can be a lot of disharmony in our souls, in our bodies, etc. In fact, that's what the word health means. To harmonize.
Well, I think that I think that we should get into this in more detail in preparation for this next year, which is going to be definitely challenging. But right now, let's take a break.
All right.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. The original productions by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix in particular has opened up a new and powerful form of television that has both global income and still unexplored profit potential as convergence between offline and online media continues to blossom. We can help persons needing creative help to turn their ideas for television pilots into actionable, marketable scripts. There's probably nothing more exciting in the field of entertainment than these new vistas online as that capacity crosses more and more to the big screen. And the opportunities for instantaneous online projections of any type of media in that perennially popular venue. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Dr. Hugo Rodier has published 4 books on health issues covering practically all chronic health problems. You may find them by accessing his website at hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. Gut health is the most academic, while switching off chronic disease is the most patient-oriented, with simple recipes to implement his nutritional protocols. Patriots Act is a Brent Marks legal thriller written by Kenneth Eade, a novelist and attorney, often appearing on Threshold Radio. It's about Ahmed, a naturalized U.S. citizen formerly of Iraq, who was sent to Guantanamo Bay detention camp with no real knowledge of a crime he has committed. Brent Marks, a California attorney, is originally hired by Ahmed's wife to fight for his release. The novel opens with a convincing mock execution, a mode of torture meant to break down a prisoner in a brutal and traumatic way that foreshadows Ahmed's actual death in the hands of his accusers.
Ahmed felt the butt of the rifle strike his spine as his knees buckled and he hit the floor.
Move faster, Haji. Up against the wall. Stop there. Good. Listen up. My name is Sergeant Brown. You're here because you refused to cooperate in the interrogations. The decision has been made to execute you by firing squad.
Wait, I'm an American citizen.
Ahmed felt the black bag rip from his head and for the first time faced his aggressors. He found himself facing a man in camouflage fatigues, holding an M16 to his chest. Beside him, an 8-man firing squad with their rifles in ready position.
I have the right to talk to an attorney. This is all a big mistake.
Brown fastened a leather strap around Ahmed's waist, pinning his spine to a wooden post.
Yeah, a big mistake. You should have cooperated when we asked you about your superiors in Al-Qaeda.
I don't know anyone in Al-Qaeda.
Do you have any last statement, Haji?
But
I repeat, do you have any last statement?
I'm not a terrorist. I'm an American citizen. I've a right to a lawyer and a trial. You've denied me these rights. You will answer to God for your crimes.
I think you can see who has all the rights here. Ready? Aim!
The 8 pointed their rifles at Ahmed. Shivering uncontrollably, Ahmed's knees gave way, and he hung on the post like a man crucified.
Fire!
The deafening explosion of the 8 rifles was the last thing Ahmed heard. He felt the bullets hit his flesh, and his body crumpled forward, hanging lifelessly from the post like a scarecrow.
Well, that was a little bit of dramatic stuff, and that's how Ken Eade writes. He writes about serious matters. In this case, it's a kind of a Guantanamo issue. And I think that that brings back sort of, in my mind, the Bush era and the various challenges that we're now facing in our lives on a daily basis as more and more seems to be taken away. And we're talking about possibility of nuclear war, the destruction of our coastal environment, possibly by excessive drilling that's now permitted, the circumventing of the complete area of our national monuments. Just so many things are happening right now. We need to be ready and to deal with these things in the right way for this next year. And I think this the word integrative, medicine, is very interesting. Because it's kind of a new type of medicine that's been on the scene. I seem to remember people talking more about in the past alternative and complementary medicine as terms. What's happened to them?
Well, they've been superseded by this integrative medicine. But even that term, integrative medicine, I think is going to go.
Really?
Yeah. Ultimately, it'll just be medicine. And so we get all these adjectives because we sense that things are not doing well. We sense that there needs to be a change. And so alternative medicine was quite pejorative. Why is nutrition an alternative? Why is paying attention to the psyche and to the environment alternatives? As if the mainstream medicine is the only way to go and everything else has to suck up to the big boys. No, so all these terms are going to go.
Isn't that somewhat like the news industry? I mean, you have alternative press.
Yeah, same thing.
And there's something a little bit wrong with the mainstream press, and so people are still comparing it to them because it's so big. And like conventional medicine is huge. Pharmaceutical products are gigantic.
Right. So they created the impression that that's the only way to go. Everything else must be an alternative. So these are defects of a failure to integrate. And it's interesting because the same debate is going on within integrative medicine, doctors like me. And it turns out that the same issues are seen within the movement.
Really?
The issue of strength and wisdom. Oh, yes. That's just human nature. So every time you go anywhere, you're going to see a polarization of Democrats, Republicans, money, heart, environment, industry. It's always the same. It's like the French say, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. The more things change, the more things are the same. In fact, Ecclesiastes in the Bible made a meal out of that. There's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
Nothing new under the sun. So we see the same things. In fact, there's a whole lot of docs within the integrative health movement saying that this is the way to go, that we need to empower people in a practical, fairly inexpensive way to take care of themselves and teach them very basic principles about nutrition, the environment, getting along with people, relationships. How expensive can that be if you just teach people? But then those are the docs who militate more to the right side of the brain, the more female, the more wisdom type part of the brain. And then you have the doctors who embrace the integrative medicine movement more from strength, from the left side of the brain, from the more male side of the brain. These docs are into money. They have big clinics. Doctors get sucked into these clinics. They spend thousands of dollars. They get a bunch of supplements and no empowerment whatsoever. In fact, these clinics are quite happy to prescribe a whole lot of hormones because they're more nutritious, more organic, if you will, more physiologic, if you will, without regard to consequences or standard testing. And there's a place for that type of medicine. But what's going on here, and it's just that they're not integrating truly what Leonardo da Vinci, the discussion we had about those very basic principles. And so that recalls a very, very telling scripture by the Master, Jesus Christ, when he tells people, you cannot put new wine in old bottles.
Right.
And that's so insightful. So here's a bunch of doctors who get a new thing, integrative medicine, and try to put it in an old system, in an old bottle.
Mm-hmm.
The system of making money, the system of not teaching people, the system of hurting people through clinics and rushed visits with an army of ancillary people to help them with insurance billing, with excessive testing. And so they're putting new wine in old bottles. It's not going to work. And so daily I see patients who have been to those clinics. They have spent a lot of money, are no better for it. And so, yeah, we need this debate to continue. And it's not going to be solved unless we develop a tolerance and respect for each other's points of view so that we can see, we can find something in the middle.
You know, I was thinking about the sort of the cultural positioning of this new movement, which I know as a movement, I know very little about it. I do believe that perhaps you would think Andrew Weil would be an example of a more well-known doctor who was basically into this point of view. Am I correct?
Yes and no. I think he's an example of integrative doctors that became too big and too commercialized.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, if you go through his program, you'll spend days there, spend thousands of dollars. And so it just they're trying to put new wine in old bottles. And I think the real changes will take place one-to-one to truly inspire people, the patient, to see how simple it is and not to rip them off and want to spend so much money. See, what happens is that a great article came out in the Mayo Clinic, Hurtling Down the Road to Ruin. This good reporter showed how walking in a clinic, these big clinics, you have to spend, they have to write up a whole lot of orders. They have to do a lot of testing to keep the doors open. And so a lot of people get, for instance, the reporter talks about just about everyone getting a colonoscopy, which is totally overdone. In Europe, they're not done so many, and they're much cheaper. So we created a beast, a huge beast that needs to be fed. And so that's, you see a lot of overprescribing. So a lot of integrative doctors fall into this trap. This is what I was talking about, new wine in old bottles. So in my mind, Deepak Chopra, Andrew Weil, these big shots have fallen into that trap.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Could you give any examples of other legendary doctors who may have embraced this medicine without compromise?
Well, absolutely. The first one, Hippocrates. Okay. And everybody's familiar with that guy. Tell me what he said. Remember?
Food is medicine.
Yeah, food is the best medicine. Exactly. Which was echoed by William Osler, a humble physician from Canada. Thought to be the father of modern medicine. He said the same thing. Food is the best medicine. And you know what? This guy was the president of the American, the British, and the Canadian Library Associations. So in my mind, he came pretty close to a modern Leonardo da Vinci and the medical world. So a lot of respect for those guys. As far as modern docs toiling today, well, if they really get it, they're going to be toiling in obscurity because they have understood that it's not about them. It's about the patient. It's not about making money. Anyway, that's my take on it. And so I have a jaundiced view of over-commercialization of these very basic principles.
Well, don't you think that that really fits into a lot of different disciplines? Where people,
absolutely.
Where people who are well known have kind of cannibalized a lot of the good stuff, but have integrated it with the over commercialization of their message.
Exactly. In fact, here's a good article in the New York Times Magazine, clear back in 2009. Stop Your Search Engines, the title of the article, and he uses the analogy of Ulysses. How he had to plug his ears with wax so he wouldn't hear the sirens singing, because he knew his goose was cooked. If he hurt them, he'd just jump overboard and die. And so he knew that he had to avoid listening to them, and he put that wax in his ears. Well, this is very much what's going on today. There's too much information, too much testing, too much surfing the internet, and thereby missing out on the simplicity of true knowledge. I tell you, the sure sign of hitting the right mark is simplicity. Einstein was really good about that. You might think of him as a very complex thinker, but really, he was so good because he struck at the heart of the matter, and he espoused simplicity. So I don't think guys see it in the system today. We make things complex to snow the patient, so they think they're getting something really cool because they don't understand it, when the opposite should be the way to do it. Explain the simplicity of what we're going to do here so that you, the patient, can embrace it and run with it and fire me and not see me anymore.
Oh, that would be a shame, though.
Yeah, that'd be terrible. There's another article that I want to highlight, Journal Lancet, 2006. Where are all the philosophers when we need them? So what's this good doc doing writing about philosophy in a medical journal? Well, it tells me that he has understood these very basic principles of uniting science and art, left brain, right brain. Okay? And so I would answer the question, they've always been with us. It's just that they get ignored. And take, for instance, our own democracy, our own republic. Where are the philosophers who understood this integrative thinkers, integrative thinking? In my mind, the first two that were able to bring this kind of thinking to America were the transcendentalists, Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. I've read their work, and if people have not read these two Americans, they have nothing to envy any other philosophy in the history of the world. Of course, they said it in a very American way, but they talked about the very same things we're talking about today. All right? Of course, Thoreau had a little more trouble because he became a bit of a hermit there for a while. Emerson was a little more balanced in that he was able to live in regular society. But Thoreau got it later in life when he matured a little bit more. We're talking about humanism, and that's a huge word that I think deserves a lot of time because it's quite misunderstood. A lot of people are scared of humanism because they might be over-religious. So, look, you and I, Johnny, we're always talking about humanistic and religious ideas, and we go back and forth without making any distinction because we've been able to see that they're just two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, and there's great value in both sides and seeing their connection, of course.
Right, so I just took a minute there to talk about the word because some people get scared when they hear it. But all it is a respect for human nature, human values. And so here's a great article in the JAMA 2015 of Science, Humanism, and Medicine. The good doc says that we've strayed too much into thinking of people as bodies. You know, it lets you do a test, see what your kidneys are doing, and sure, that's all well and good. But it's a little bit cold, you know, when we don't look at the individual as a person. What are that person's beliefs? What's your diet? Who do you hang out with? Et cetera, et cetera. I think embracing these simple concepts, again, you know, corporalita, arte ciencia, et cetera, et cetera. It's a good start. You mentioned a technique of crossing your arms and all that. That's another good tip to start down that path in this new year, attempting to see the whole picture.
Well, we're going to take a break now. We'll get back to trying to integrate ourselves before this show ends.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Want to write a book but don't want the challenges of developing time-consuming social media platform, costly private book promotions, complex email campaigns, and advertising commitments? If you write a book about your business, you don't need a mass audience. Focus on prospective clients with the best business card there is, your own book.
To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
Are you confused about so much information on health issues? Do you find it hard to trust the sources of conflicting advice? Try Dr. Rodier's newsletters and blogs based on the latest information published in the best medical and nutritional journals. There is no charge for subscribing. Just log on to HugoRodier.com. That's HugoRodier.com to do so, or to download Dr. Rodier's latest publications.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, as other Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
You know, Doctor, we were talking about the sort of integration of humanism with the physical aspect of medicine. And I don't know if you've read this book, but it's kind of a surprising book to me. I've actually almost read it 3 times. It was by Michael Crichton, who wrote The Andromeda Strain, and most famously the Jurassic Park. But did you know that he had actually become a doctor before he started to write? And he wrote this book called Travels. Did you ever read that book?
No.
This is a phenomenal book, although it's not really about, it's about travels to some degree. It's also about his spiritual adventures, but also a lot of physical stuff. But in the beginning of the book, he's talking about med school. And he never really wanted to go to med school, but they kept convincing him. And that's what he comes up with. After all this dissection and sort of very clinically and academically dealing with patients and all the things he saw and the way the doctors acted, he came to the idea that that maybe the patient sometimes knew more about, had more clues as to what to do themselves than the doctors, because the doctors were so caught up in their procedures and medicines and, you know, and analysis that they actually forwent the human elements.
Yes, he's one of my heroes.
It's a very interesting discussion of med school. It reminds me a lot of some of the things you talked about, but you survived it. I mean, he survived it too, but you you found an alternative, right, during that period of time. You didn't just stick with the curriculum and the books.
Yes, I think I identify with Crichton. Of course, I wish I could write the way he did. Well, and so he's an example of a doctor who was able to do some Leonardo da Vinci thinking. And here's a good article that kind of touches on this point from the British Medical Journal this year, Critical Thinking in Healthcare and Education, which addresses the very point you made, is that doctors, and this was my experience in medical school, are being trained to become vending machines. You know, a diagnosis, you push a button,
yeah,
here comes the drug. You know, a monkey could do that, all right? And so that's what they're being trained to become. And, of course, Crichton rebelled against that. So did I. I think I may have mentioned to you that I left all my books at school, and I go home to read Asimov and Chekhov and Henry Miller and Tolstoy and Victor Hugo and things like that. And so my grades in medical school were only average. One time, you know, I decided to be like the big boys, and I took the textbooks home to Bonnet for a test, and I got the third highest score in the class. So I figured, you know what? I don't care for this type of rote memorization, which is all it was.
Yeah.
The biggest thing I learned in medical school, Johnny, was where the library was. Of course, I don't go there anymore because now we have the internet. But I used to go, even as a doctor, once a month to read about 100 medical journals and hard copies in my hands until the internet revolution took care of that. Yes, a lot of doctors are unhappy with their medical education because they're not getting what they thought they were going to get. I thought I was going to be trained to be a Renaissance doctor. How naive. You know, I thought I was going to be taught about nutrition, the environment, spiritual things. There was just no time for it.
Yeah, you've been trained to be a vending machine.
Right. In defense of the system, I must say that the sciences are so strong and voluminous that it pushes out the weaker sister, if you will. But we see that all over the place. Strength beats up on wisdom initially, but then wisdom wins over at the end. So I'm waiting for what the adjustment that must come. With this type of training, you end up with overdiagnosis of disease. And so take, for instance, reflux. Who doesn't have reflux? Well, it used to be just something that people get when they eat poorly. That's what it used to be. Now, it's a disease that must be treated by 100% shutting off your stomach acid, which is lunacy.
Oh, wow.
Those drugs are even over the counter. Yeah, when I was in medical school, those drugs came out in the early 80s. You know, those acid blockers like Prilosec, Prevacid, Nexium. And they block acid production 100%. We were pretty happy with Xantax and Tagamet, which block acid only partially when people are having ulcers and all that. So we were told that you don't want to block acid 100%. It's not good. You're not going to digest food properly. Sure, I got it. And they're only prescribed by specialists in the most dire of cases, you know, a bleeding ulcer in the hospital. Now those infernal drugs are over the counter with no prescription, with terrible side effects, including heart attacks. Yeah, look it up. Well, that's what happens when you block the poor processing of food. Not just heart attacks, but all kinds of dysfunction throughout the system. And so a lot of diseases get diagnosed when in reality are just minor inconveniences of daily living, particularly when you're under stress, toxic, and eating poorly. So instead of teaching people these basic things, which what, took me about a minute to tell you?
Yeah.
We just give people a drug to go on their way, and then they'll come back for the drug, of course, for a refill. And then who gets better? No one. You know, that's why I was really glad to see a great article in the JAMA.
Yeah, that is
2013.
Nice.
Yeah, this terrific article. The title of the article, Bridging the Divide Between Health and Healthcare. The title right there tells you that our system has nothing to do with health. It's a disease care system. But, you know, I don't like to quote very much, but this is such an amazing article. I got to quote a little bit, okay?
Of course, go ahead.
Healthcare delivery accounts for only 10% of preventable death, with the remainder attributable to personal behavior, social and environmental determinants, and genetic predispositions, quote unquote. What is it telling you? That all the money you spend, high premiums, thousands of dollars, excessive testing, excessive prescribing, only prevent 10% of death. What about the other 90%? The article tells you. That's personal behaviors, how you eat, how you interact with people, how you relate to the environment, etc. And so that's the 90% that I trouble myself with and try to teach patients. In short visits, you don't need to be a genius to get it. All you need to be is willing to empower people to understand these very basic truths that are so simple. I had a patient tell me it's too simple, can't be true. So I had to blog about complexity and simplicity, which is something every philosopher has tackled. And so to me, the mark of a bad philosopher is when I don't understand him. Is when it's too complicated, when he's too much into himself or herself, so I don't even know what the guy is saying. That's why I love ordinary people. They get it. You know, all they need is a little information right now.
Yeah, well, what they get is a catalog of side effects after they hear a couple of benefits. While they're watching people play on swings and walk around in parks. I'm talking about pharmaceutical commercials.
Yes, an article came out in the JAMA this year. I titled the article "Breaking the Rules for Better Care." You know, my roguish mind, you know, kind of loved it, and people might misunderstand. No, but it's about how we need to think outside the box, how we need outsiders with their new ideas come into the system, which is rigid, glacial, and its change, and inject some new blood. Now, I would keep in mind, and I would tell the author of these articles, you can't put new wine in old bottles. So I blogged about this years ago, that true change, Johnny, happens only when the old guys die. Because the old guys are just too entrenched. You know, they're not going to let go of the marbles. They want to keep the marbles and play with them. They're not going to share. They're not going to change. And so with all due respect to old people, it's not coming out right.
That's right. Well,
you know what I mean. They've had their day in the sun, and now let the new guys come in with apply new ideas and new bottles, put new wine in new bottles.
I know you're reading still a lot of journals, and I was wondering, as we're talking about this, you know, I'm thinking of how mainstream news sources deal with alternative news sources, largely ignoring them, but sometimes bringing them up in a very disparaging way just to get them out of the way. And I wonder, how is the sort of mainstream medicine literature and so forth, media dealing with integrative medicine? How are they? Are they ever talking about it?
Yes.
Good or bad way?
No. Many articles are coming out saying that we need to be teaching literature in medical school. Really? Yeah. And here's one, American Journal of Medicine, 2014. I'll quote from it. The title is My Recent Reading List of Non-Medical Books. So the good doc goes and writes dozens of books that have influenced him. And the good doctor writing the article quotes William Osler. Remember I mentioned the Canadian doc, president of the American, British, and Canadian Library Associations?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so he puts in a quote by Osler in that article, My Recent Reading List of Non-Medical Books. So Osler says, "But by the neglect of the studies of the humanities, which has been far too general, the profession, the medical profession, loses a very precious commodity. There are at least a dozen or more works which would be helpful in getting wisdom in life, which comes only to those who earnestly seek it," quote unquote. You know, I shed a tear or two when I read another quote by Osler. When he died, he had a vast library, and he donated his books to these regular libraries. And then he said, "Put my ashes on nearby all my books, because I want to see how generations after me will be reading my books and enjoying them." And this is probably a good time to tell you the books that have touched my heart, and you can share your own list, if you will. But the top two books that have shaped my life are one, Les Miserables by Victor Hugo, and two, The Little Prince by Exupéry. The lessons of those books are incredible. In fact, a lot of religious leaders have put those two books clear at the top with the Bible. So if people have not read those two books, they're missing out. What's your list?
Well, one thing that I would mention that I think is foundational are the dialogues of Plato. Alfred North Whitehead, who was a 20th century philosopher, wrote Process and Reality, said 2,000 years of philosophy have only been a set of footnotes to Plato. And I think that Plato really deals with a lot of questions and sort of an approach that really fits into the, and I think not unintentionally, into what you call the Hermetic aspect of thinking. So that was really an important book for me.
Thank you. Well, let me comment on that. Well, I read a great book by Mr. Herman, The Cave on the Light, which talks about Plato and Aristotle. There's a great painting by Raphael in La Sagrada Familia, a great painting by Raphael, which shows Plato and Aristotle. Plato is pointing up and Aristotle is pointing down. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Well, that's the cover of the book.
I must say, Plato is, to me, was much more exciting and, you know, thought-provoking than Aristotle was, and I had to read a lot of Aristotle, too, because I went to a classics college.
All right. But the point of the book, and by putting that picture on the front of the book, Herman makes the point that I've been trying to make. Plato is more about the heart, about philosophy, about the right brain, about wisdom. Aristotle is about more about science, empiricism, about material things, about strength. They point up and down. And then Raphael paints every philosopher he knew up to that time on either side of the room. So they're polarized. The point that Raphael makes and Herman makes in that great book is that they're both right, that we need to integrate strength and wisdom,
yes,
science and art, the heart and the physical, etc., etc. In fact, here's a great article that does the same thing from the Mayo Clinic Proceedings 2013. Title of the article, Empiricism and Rationalism in Medicine. Can two competing philosophies coexist to improve the quality of healthcare? Well, the good doc gets into the same discussion that we're having now, that both are right.
You know, doctor, sadly, it's time to make people wait another week to hear more of this conversation. And we're, of course, interested in everybody's ideas. And they can find us and note things in the blog and discussions and so forth. So now we're going to sadly close. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Well, thank you very much, Johnny.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Email campaigns in this world of internet marketing saturation need to contain useful information without some of the more obnoxious and falsely composed solicitations that often appear in one's inbox. We specialize in the creation of products that respect the consumer and emphasize the value and utility of products and services and are developed in a concise and meaningful way. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.